This is the MBN Podcast. Here are your hosts, Nathan Schwartz and Jack Suzanne.
Hello and welcome to the 103rd episode of the MBN Podcast. I'm Nathan Schwartz. With me over Zoom today is Jack Suzanne, back after missing last week's episode. Of course, Jack, you were in Evanston with the team for that three-game set against Northwestern. We had Oliver and Tyler on to fill your shoes. We had a great time, but how happy are you to be back on the pod this week?
I'm more happy, that Tyler and Oliver aren't here after Tyler's Nick LaRusso first overall pick, which, to be fair, we do love Nicky Lowe, and he did have a great weekend this weekend for the Brooklyn Cyclones. But really, over Matt Shaw? Wow. Happy to be back. Obviously, a tough weekend at Evanston, but a good finale, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely a good way to finish it off. And I think your reaction to the Nick LaRusso first pick was me and Oliver's. We looked at each other and was like, no way he just said that, right? And again, nothing against Nick LaRusso, but Matt Shaw was just that guy. For all 3 years, he was with Maryland baseball. So I thought he was the surefire number one pick. But anyway, I digress. We move on to this weekend in Evanston. And as you mentioned, Jack, didn't go the way I think a lot of Maryland fans, us as the broadcasters and the team thought it was going to go.
You hit the nail on the head there. First two games were just, I guess you can call it a disaster. I mean, this Northwestern team, credit to them, first of all. They played really well over the weekend. They had a great series at the plate. In the field, they were phenomenal. Were pretty much mistake-free on the defensive end of things. It was a couple games Friday, Saturday, you know, throw that one out. You know, you're going to get your butt kicks sometimes, and that's baseball. But Friday's a game they really should have won. And obviously you would have preferred to sweep them. But if you take two out of three, that's not going to be the end of the world.
Yeah, I don't think going into this weekend, the weekend I'm referring to being the Northwestern one, that they could have afforded to lose a third consecutive Big Ten series. Of course, they had the loss in Ann Arbor to Michigan, and then at home to Indiana, and then you try and build some momentum back, especially after those two midweek games last week against Georgetown and UMBC, which didn't go Maryland's way. To then start this series off with two losses definitely was a sign of things going in the wrong direction. And we can jump into this Friday game where, in what seems like is becoming the pattern for every Maryland baseball game to be played this season, that results in a close one. Maryland jumps out to a lead, a 1-0 lead in the second, thanks to a Sam Honar double, Jacob Orr with a bases clearing double in the top half of the fourth, and then Northwestern starts to get a couple back. Maryland was up 5-2 at one point, lose 6-5 on a walk-off by Tony Livermore, and it was just one of those games where you're like, man, we should have had that one. It slipped out of our hands, and you just got to move on and play the next game.
Yeah, and you know, you go back to that second inning, and Honar, so it's Eddie leads off with a double, who, by the way, is having an unbelievable last couple of weeks, even though the team has not been playing the best. The tear that Eddie Hacopian is on is truly incredible. So Eddie leads off with a double. Kev grounds out. And then Honar brings home Eddie with the double. Then a Lambros bunt single. Then Colarco gets hit. The bases are loaded with one out, and they don't score after that. And that's where I'm like, oh boy. Because against a team like Northwestern, you need to be scoring in these situations. And then you move on to the fourth inning. Honar leads off with a single. Lambros singles. Colarco gets hit. Bases loaded. No outs. Then Glennon pops out. Brayden Martin grounds out into a fielder's choice at home. And that's when I'm like, oh boy, two down. And thank God for Jacob Orr with that bases clearing double, because if they didn't score that inning, that would have been one of the more concerning things I've ever seen from this team. But they found a way, credit to them there. But then just nothing was working for the rest of the game, other than that fifth inning where Eddie hits the double, shocker, gets over to third, and then Lambros brings him home on the squeeze bunt, which I do want to give credit to Elijah real quick before we dive into the rest of the episode. He was 1-for-14 coming into this series in his last 14 at-bats or whatever, and he had a really nice series at the plate, you know. Didn't have the flashy home runs, obviously had the flashy play on Sunday, which we'll talk about, but he didn't have, like, the flashy home runs. But he was getting on base pretty consistently, even yesterday, which is so, so huge for him. He's so important to this Maryland team at the bottom of this order to turn it over for the top, and I think he had a big series. And it started out with a small ball, two bunts on Friday. But then it didn't work for Maryland the rest of the game. And it's just, yeah, it just didn't work. And then the pitching slowly started to fade away. Evan Smith just could not really find the zone in his outing on Friday. Kenny wasn't awful. Six innings, five hits, three runs I have him at. No walks, which is huge for him. Five strikeouts too. But then the bullpen just didn't have it. It just, you know, when you have a guy like Logan Barrier who's been so reliable for you all year, he's going to have days where he just doesn't have his best stuff. And that was Friday. And unfortunately for Maryland, it cost him the game.
Yeah, and it was definitely Barrier's worst performance so far this season. It was the first real blemish to his season that resulted in a loss. Of course, he blew the save against Michigan State in the first game of that series, but then of course Maryland is able to come back and win that one. In this case, Logan Barrier gives up the lead, and then when the game became tied, and then in that bottom of the 10th inning gives up the walk off to Livermore. And you go back to Kenny, it was a quality start for Lippman with those 3 earned runs and six innings. The pitch count was only at 87, but the big thing there, the no walks, I think that's going to be crucial to him and his season moving forward, and will maybe a different role. We'll kind of talk about that when we get to the Delaware game. But you're right, Evan Smith and Logan Barrier really struggled. Barrier gives up six hits in 2 2/3 innings, the 3 earned runs, one walk. Smith walked 3 in just 2/3 of an inning. But the big thing that I wanted to focus on was Nolan Moore, the starter for Northwestern, only goes an inning and a third. And when you are able to, yes, he was serving in more of that opener role, but when you're able to get the starting pitcher out of the game so quickly, I feel like you have to pounce on that opportunity. And what happened was Matt McClure, who comes in for Northwestern, becomes that next starting guy. And the numbers overall are a little lopsided, 4 earned runs, but 6 1/3 innings. If you can get 6 innings from your first guy out of the bullpen, that's absolutely massive. And that's something that not a lot of teams can do. And whether they could have, of course, started McClure and then have more come in after, but just the way the structure of that shaped out, it was all around just a great game for Northwestern, probably one of their more complete games all season long. And it was their first win of Big Ten Conference play. And I think that's a big reason why the panic button was pressed by a lot of the fans on this one, because this is a Maryland team that in years past probably would have won this game convincingly. But instead, Northwestern gets that first win in the Big Ten column, and it was just their 11th win of the season.
Yeah, and you bring up the pitching. Northwestern just does not have starting pitching. Like, period, end of story. They don't have starting pitching. Nolan Moore opened two of the games over the weekend. He opened Friday, he opened Sunday. And, you know, credit to McClure. But going back to Moore, this is a guy that struggled throughout the course of the season. He struggled against UIC in their midweek game. He struggled against Penn State over the weekend. This was a guy that Maryland should have gotten to. And it goes back to that second inning, where, you know, they had the bases loaded and they just weren't able to capitalize too much other than the Honar double. So, you know, it goes back. I forget how many runners they left on base that game. I think it was like 11, somewhere around there. But regardless, you know, credit to McClure. Credit to Garrett Shearer as well. He came in. He has a funky arm angle release point. But he was really, really good. And yeah, credit to Northwestern. It was a heck of a win for him.
Yeah, and so that puts Maryland on a bit of a sour note to begin the series. And then you go into Saturday's game. You just need to bounce back somehow. But that just did not happen. It was very similar to what happened the week prior against Indiana, where you just get punched in the mouth early, and there's no way around it. And it was also very similar to what we saw the Saturday prior to that in Ann Arbor, where it was just a blowout. Maryland only gets one run on the board. In this case, it comes in the top of the ninth on an Alex Colarco RBI double against his former team. But, man, Northwestern's offense looks the best it probably has all year. They put up 11 runs on 9 hits, highlighted by a 7 spot in the bottom of the fifth. Really, the only two hitters that did anything for Maryland in this game were Eddie Hacobian, of course, 3 for 4. And we can talk a little bit more about the overall tear he's been on once we talk about all the games. And then Michael Iannazzo, who started to get more of a role in this lineup as a third baseman, filling in for Chris Hacobian, who's now sliding into the designated hitter spot. Iannazzo's gotten the opportunity and ran with it. He's put together a ton of good at-bats before he even became a routine starter over this weekend. He was putting together really good at-bats in pinch-hit scenarios. He got a pinch-hit single in extra innings on Friday in that loss that we didn't talk about a couple minutes ago. Then comes back, gets the start on Saturday, and gets 2 hits. So those are really the lone 2 positives for Maryland in this game. Other than that, it was a whole lot of wow, just a shock to lose by 10 and lose the series to Northwestern.
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. And I think I said it, you know, coming into that fifth inning. It was the top of the order for Northwestern. Preston Knott, who had a heck of a weekend. He singles, Owen McElfatrick singles. Then Jackson Freeman reached on an error over at first by Eddie, and that's when I'm like, uh-oh. Because I think that was the one where he couldn't field it on, like, a short hop and then try to throw it back to first and throw it into right field. And that's, I think, allowed at least one to score, however many allowed to score. And then it was just, like, walks, hit by pitches. They're just struggling, period, end of story. They just couldn't get outs. It just was not a good inning for Maryland, and unfortunately, it's one of those games where they got punched early. Obviously, Preston Knott led that game off with a homer. And then they scored again in the second, and then 2 in the fourth. And that's when I'm sort of like, you know, the team just didn't respond. And again, that'll happen. You know, you're going to get your butt kicked sometimes. What was concerning to me in this one was the defense. There's a drop fly ball by Braden Martin that would have pretty much ended the inning. It wouldn't have ended the inning. It would have been the second out, but then the next batter, Livermore, would have grounded out and ended the inning. Therefore, you would not have allowed the 2 runs in the fourth. If Hacopian makes a play at first in the fifth, who knows what that inning turns into. So it's this defense that's sort of snowballing. We saw it again on Sunday a little bit. It's a lot of guys playing positions they aren't necessarily familiar with. I get that. But there were some plays that where I'm like, really, what are we doing here?
Yeah, and this was now a 4-game losing streak for Maryland, something I don't believe we've seen since we've gotten to campus. It was just, like I said earlier, but just a shock to see that score on that scoreboard for the Big Ten Plus broadcast, because it's just not something we're used to seeing. And this team getting blown out in Big Ten play. And we've seen it now a couple times this season, but all it takes is one game to get your season back on track. And that's what happened on Sunday. Now, it was a game where there was some back and forth. There was some extreme dramatics throughout. Jack, why don't you just take us through 1 through 10 because this was one of the crazier games that Maryland's going to play all season.
It's the craziest game I've ever seen Maryland play in my time here. I think the line I used was it doesn't get more cardiac Terps than or something along those lines. But you start off in the first inning. I think I said Maryland needs a hot start. And Chris Hakopian walk, Eddie Hakopian homer, 2-0 Terps. Eddie picked up a little bit of an injury before Friday night's game. That's why he was DHing. And he said he adjusted the way he, like, steps to the plate or something. And he realized on Friday, like, hey, this feels kind of good. So he kept doing it, and it's working.
The power is way up.
Yeah, it's way up. So whatever he's doing, keep doing it. He's hilarious. But whatever. Eddie homers 2-0. Then they get another run off of Devin Russell double in the second. But again, that should have probably been two because Colarco got thrown out trying to go first to third on a single to left field. So then they give up 2 runs to Northwestern. That was also on an error. That might have been the – it was an error. No, that was the error on Colarco where he couldn't scoop it. They give up the runs there to Northwestern. Then Northwestern takes the lead in the third. And that's when you're like, you know, uh-oh. Then the fifth comes, and Maryland just manufactures runs. You know, period, end of story. They just keep getting on base, a couple singles in a row. And they find their way to just keep getting runs across. And credit to them, that was a Kevin Keister single, a Braden Martin bunt single. And then Iannazzo grounded into a double play with nobody out. Then the run came across. So that was a good inning for Maryland there. Then the sixth inning, Eddie homers again. I talked to him, and I don't know if I believe this. It's definitely true at Maryland. But he said that's his first 2-home run game in his life. Like, Little League ever. I don't know if I believe
personally,
that.
Personally,
I'll take his
word for it. I find that hard to believe. But, again, we're gonna take his word for it. We haven't been around, of course. We can guarantee it's his first 2-home run game at Maryland, for sure.
Yeah, and he didn't. This was his 100th game. He didn't even know that. I told him after the game. He's like, yeah, it's your 100th game. He's like, it is? Cool. It's a good way to do it. And I'm like, yeah, I can't ask for much better than that. So they get the 2 runs in the sixth. And then Omar Melendez comes in. And he's been good this year, but the homers have sort of been that Achilles heel for him. Gives up a solo in the sixth. Gives up a solo in the seventh that Eddie just missed robbing. I don't know if it, like, fell out of his glove or something, but he was, like, millimeters away from robbing this. So the Terps are due for a robbery later on. But then the eighth inning, Griffin Mills is up with 2 outs. And Griffin Mills is a guy who had 2 hits all year. He's like 2 for like 35 coming into this AB. I'm like, all right, inning's over. He hits a ball the other way down the right field line. He's a right-handed hitter. I swear off the bat it was a routine fly ball. Maybe it would have been tough because it was going to be foul down the line and Braden would have had to give it a good chase. I thought there was no shot that this ball was leaving the yard, and it just snuck out. I mean, just. And it was one of those, I was just in shock that it got out. I mean, I thought there was literally no way that ball was going to get out, but it did. And, you know, you take the punch, you move on. Ninth inning, you lead off. And you get the first batter on. I believe that was Zeisloft, maybe? Or is that Colarco? Whoever it was. You get Colarco on, and then you can't bring him around, which is, you know, a bit frustrating. But you move on to the bottom of the ninth. And a walk, a single, and then the intentional walk. Which I thought was interesting because Jimmy Jackson said it. He's thinking, like, why did I do that? Anything ends this game now. Obviously, there were runners on second and third, and they did that to get the force out at any base. But now a walk ends the game. Now a hit by pitch ends the game. You know, anything like that ends the game. I mean, we went through the situation. It's a wild pitch, a pass ball, a walk, a hit by pitch, any sort of hit, a ground ball deep, a fly ball deep. I mean, that's 7 situations right there that ends the game. But the trust they showed in Evan I think, gave him so much confidence. And the first batter after that, Lyolis, who had a really nice weekend, Trent Lyolis, who I think has the worst walk-up song of all time. No offense to him, but I don't even know what it was, but it sounded like a horse dying.
Oh, God.
It was so bad. It was so, so bad. Anyways, he gets a hanging slider from Evan, and right out of the hand, everyone knew it was a hanger. Lyolis somehow doesn't make the most of it, lines right at Lambros, who is playing maybe as shallow as I've ever seen an outfielder play. And the runner's not able to tag up from third. I think the runner on third, Freeman, was like going because he thought it was going to get down. But Lambros was playing so shallow that it worked out. Next batter was Tony Livermore. He grounds out to Eddie, who throws home, obviously. It's funny, Devin Russell was behind the plate. He said he was thinking about throwing. He's like, huh? That's exactly the way he described it. But then he said, if I threw that ball, it would have been in right field and the game would have been over. So he didn't, and then it worked out. Ground ball to Keister by Mills, flips to second, gets the out. And Evan was so fired up after that.
Yes, he was.
The emotion he showed was amazing. It was so
Jason
Sabacool
like emotion right there.
Exactly. I mean, and why not? If you escape a bases loaded jam in the ninth of a tie game, you deserve to celebrate all you can. And then top of the 10th, we go. Eddie leads off and hits a ball that off the bat, I'm like, this is gone. He's crushed it to center. But their center field, I don't know if it's like, it's not actually deep, but it plays deep because of the wind or whatever. But Eddie flies out to center. And then Honar hits a ball that, again, I think has no shot of getting out. Like, I think it's like a fly ball, edge of the warning track type deal. But it just keeps going and going and going, and it gets out. I think that ball was in the air for what felt like 10 seconds.
But I was in the car. I was in the car watching it, and I'm like, okay, yeah, that's just like your regular fly ball to left. And then the dude just kept going and going and going. And then I just let out like a let's go, like that, because I mean we needed that one. We needed it.
We needed it. And then they threatened to score more. Keister doubled, Orr walked, and then Luke Zeisloft hit a ball really hard into left field. I thought that was gonna get in the gap. But the left fielder Preston Knott made a really nice play to end the inning. Take it to the 10th. They bring back out Evan Smith, which again shows the confidence in him. Strikeout of Griffin Arnone, strikeout of Preston Knott. McElfatrick had a tough series, so I'm like, all right, here we go. Get him to a 3-2 count. And the way Jimmy Jackson described it was a changeup that he called. Either he's going to swing at it in the dirt, strike three, game over. He's going to walk him. You worry about the next guy, which I didn't think was the best idea because the next guy was Jackson Freeman, who had a heck of a series. But Evan leaves the change up a bit in, and McElfatrick off the bat, my heart just fell out of my chest. I thought that was so far gone. And the ball keeps flying. Lambros goes back, and I'm just like, all right, well, he's going to give it a shot. We've seen him do it, you know, a couple times before. And then, I don't know. I just blacked out.
I'm going to play the clip. I'm going to play the clip of the call right here. So this is Jack's call of that home run. Or home run robbery, I should say. Yeah, you were pretty fired up, weren't you?
Yeah, I don't know if I could hear it. I don't know if the listeners will be able to hear it, but sure. Yeah. Oh, I just realized you're editing it. Sorry, let me redo that.
Now, let's start that whole thing over. All right, let's play this call of the home run robbery by Jack. Man, Jack, you were pretty fired up. I think I could say that's the most fired up I've ever heard you over the last 3 years.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happened there. Bryant Avery, our SID, was fired up too. I mean, there was no way that ball was gonna get that ball was gonna get caught. I thought there was no shot. And a heck of a play, just an unbelievable play from Lambros. I don't know. I don't know. I just the play he made. Lambros said after the game he thought when there was one out he was going to rob a homer. No one believed him. Just so we are clear. But it was the vibes around the team after that game. And I think this is so important going forward. They were so much better. Obviously, it's better after a win, but these were the best vibes I've ever seen around them. Obviously, you were around them when they won the Big Ten title. But from what I've seen, I've never seen them, you know, higher. And just, you know, they were just so happy. The shower that they took after the game was in Welsh Ryan Arena, the basketball arena where they're all just playing basketball. And they're listening to Unwritten in the locker room, which I'm like, okay, sure, if that's your thing, go for it. But it was funny. We were eating our post-game meal after the game, and Jimmy goes, "All right, who believed we were going to win that game? Bases loaded in the ninth, nobody out." One person raised their hand. It was Charlie Glennon. You know, credit to Charlie.
That makes so much sense.
And it was yeah, that was an unbelievable game. I thought they couldn't get any more cardiac.
No.
They
I'm
did.
on it. Can I just go on the record and say I'm kind of sick of the cardiac stuff?
Oh,
I want
everyone is, but
to win a game normally, or at least call a game that is not ending in a home run robbery or a
I mean, I thought it was
walk-off.
more fun to call.
I mean, don't get
Knowing
me
the
wrong, like
result,
I
knowing the result,
yeah.
yes.
Don't get me wrong, I love all of the late game theatrics, but for my own sanity, I'd appreciate if we could win a game without having to do all of that. But yeah, I mean, and just my gosh. This
If
is
it's
the
sustainable. I don't know if it's like it's unbelievable.
like there's nothing you can do other than laugh about it because
I've never
it's
seen
what
anything like it.
it's just this team's identity. It's what they
Yeah.
do. Every team year to year has a different identity. And this year's team, they just know how to bounce back. They know that
And
they're
win close
never out of the
games.
game. Yeah, they know how to win close games.
It's like last year was the Grand Slam. This year it's the cardiac thing, and it's just you run out of words, really. I mean, it's
Yeah.
truly one of the more unbelievable phenomenons I've ever seen. And it's you can't even like explain it how they continue to do it. Yeah, that was an unbelievable
Yeah.
game on Sunday. I will know that's probably the craziest game I've ever called. Not the best game I've ever called. That was obviously the perfect game. But yeah, that I don't think it'll get crazier than that. That was, I think, the craziest game I've ever seen Maryland play.
Yeah, well, it doesn't beat the 17 runs in the second inning at UMBC for
Well,
me.
yeah, I'm saying like crazy in terms of like chaos. Like I
Gotcha.
think that UMBC game was like, okay, cool. You scored 17 runs against UMBC in an inning. Like that was pretty unbelievable. But
Yeah.
yeah, that I just think in terms of drama and just unbelievable, that was it.
Yeah, for
I
sure.
have no idea how they did that. I just period end of story. Yeah, cardiac.
Yeah. So, and keep this in mind, and I think this is a fair assessment to make of the situation. If Maryland loses that game, it would have been an extremely difficult, and it's still going to be an extremely difficult road to make the Big Ten tournament. But that
Yeah.
loss would have been catastrophic. A sweep at Northwestern, the worst team in the conference, a team that only won 10 games a year ago, had just gotten their 11th and 12th wins of this season in games one and two of that series, and a clean sweep by the Wildcats would have just been an awful way to go forward at this point in the season. But when you have a moment like that with what Elijah was able to do, when you see the game slipping away it's 2 feet away from becoming tied. And Elijah's able to put his glove over the fence, pull it back, and you win the game. It just, it changed everything. And you said the vibes alone from that.
Yeah.
That catch could be the turning point of this season for Maryland. It's been a rough go of it over the last 3 weeks. There's no ifs, and, ors, or buts about it. This team is going through a rough stretch. But to have a play like that to where you can get the confidence back, you can get the morale back, you can have guys knowing that you can win again, like, that's more important than anything else, in my opinion. And it's great to see that a play like that can mean so much to the guys.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And here's to hoping it is the momentum that carries them forward. And it certainly carried them forward on Tuesday against Delaware.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were talking about this yesterday, but this did feel like a game that was a must win to then go on the road again to Delaware, a place that they're quite familiar with. They always play there every year. A team you've already played this year close. It was 3-2 in College Park a couple weeks ago. And after what had happened on Sunday, you felt like you just needed to keep the momentum going. You couldn't do that and then go and lose another midweek game. It didn't seem plausible. And for a while there, it looked like Maryland was going to run away with it. Terps go on top 8-1 in the third inning. Eddie Hakopian again with a homer. That one came in the first. It was a six spot in the third. Calarco with an RBI walk. There was a wild pitch in there, a sack fly. Michael Iannazzo with an RBI single. And then Jordan Crossland hits his third homer of the season, a two-run shot to make it 8-1. And we're like, all right, here we go. Going to be another win, make it back-to-back. But here come the Blue Hens. Three runs in the fourth. Maryland actually responds with three in the top of the fifth. But then six unanswered make it 11-4 going into the bottom of the fifth to 11-10 after the sixth inning. And it just felt eerily similar to that Georgetown loss last week where Maryland was up 9-4 and then was down. I don't even remember what at that point what the score was, but they wind up losing the game 13-12. But it went the other way in this game. Maryland was able to squeak it out 11-10. I thought the pitching for the most part was really solid. Mead Johnson makes his second consecutive midweek start after starting the UMBC midweek last week on the road. Only gives up two earned runs over four innings in this one. Then Nate Havrathier struggled, didn't record an out, gives up four runs. Kenny Littman comes into this game in the bottom of the fifth inning, and we were sitting in class, Jack, and we got the stat broadcast up on our laptops, and we both see the alert at the same time. K. Littman replaces N. Havrathier, and we just looked at each other, and we're like, what?
Yeah. Was this while Oliver was doing his presentation?
It might have been.
Shout out to Oliver Shack. But we looked at each other. We had no idea this was coming. We don't know what this means. So don't be like asking us on Twitter, you know, who's starting on Friday, because we don't know. At least as of yet. But credit to Kenny, because this is a new role for him. He got the two outs that turned it, or three outs that turned into runs. In the inning he came in, which was the fifth, I believe.
Yeah, the fifth.
Then gives up that homer, to Jose Armando Diaz. Which it's not a bad outing. You'd like him to limit the walks, walk two in two innings. Did strike out three. I don't know. I don't know what this means going forward. I'm fascinated to see what happens. We could throw out a million theories as to what's going to happen. But we don't know.
Yeah, let's save those theories for after the rest of the talk of this game. But then after Lippmann comes out, you got to give credit to Ryan Van Buren, because this has been his midweek job all season long. And now, in a week where there is only one midweek, it appears that Mead Johnson has taken over the midweek starter role, at least for the time being. So for Van Buren to step back into a bullpen role, which he was familiar with over his first two seasons in the midweek, and then to come in and face eight batters, retire seven of them, only allowed one walk, this is a big reason why Maryland was able to win this game. Because after the fifth inning, the offense went cold. Maryland only scored 11, over the entire game. I say only, like, that's not impressive, yeah. But nothing over those last four innings. All 11 came in the first five. So it was going to be a reliance on pitching down the line that was going to guide Maryland to this victory. And Van Buren was able to do that. He isn't able to finish the game, of course, but Logan Barrier with a bounce back outing, he gets the final two outs, gets his second save of the season, and Maryland is able to narrowly escape in Newark 11-10. I mean, another game where you just gotta, you take the win and you move on. And it's just a testament to this team of how they're able to hold on. And again, like we said earlier, they know how to win close games. Especially with the way things have been going recently, I had this horrible feeling that Delaware was going to get a couple runs in those late innings, but Van Buren and Barrier buckled down and did what they needed to do in that spot. And I thought that was just extremely crucial to not only this game, but to Maryland going into its biggest series of the season this weekend.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. A must-win game that they won. Wasn't pretty towards the end, but and if you have a must-win game, you got to win the game, and they did. So credit to them. It worked out just fine. You pretty much hit everything I wanted to say. Credit to Van Buren, of course. Credit to Barrier to come in. For him to come in after his tough outing on Friday and slam the door. But that brings us to this weekend, which I think will be fascinating. Nebraska's probably been the best team in the Big Ten all year. They're not first in the conference, but they're struggling a bit. Lost a series last weekend against Rutgers. Granted, the one game they won 16-1. And then they lose against Creighton in the midweek. So this is a team that's lost now five of their last six. So they're struggling a bit, which, you know, it's not necessarily catching them at a good time. You would hope it's that, but this is a team that we know is really, really, really good. So you'd think they'd be able to bounce back. I don't know. They may be catching them at a good time.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be tough. That's a fantastic baseball environment out in Lincoln. I'm expecting the stadium to be packed, especially with the way this series went last year for the Huskers. These two teams played five times last year, and Maryland won four of those games. The three-game set was at the beginning of May. In College Park, Maryland was able to win on Friday, which included an Elijah Lambros home run robbery. And Maryland also won on Sunday. Nebraska took the Saturday game, and that was a shootout. I think it was 12-10 or something like that.
There were a ton of homers that week, and it was everyone was teeing off.
Yeah, ball was flying. Yeah.
Max Anderson.
Max Anderson, Bryce Matthews.
I mean, Shaw obviously hit a couple of them. I think I have it in my notes app. Hold on. Give me 1 second. Let me grab my phone.
Yeah, go for it.
I think I have in my notes app every home run I called from last year. And you got to remember, I was only on the call for six innings of that game on Sunday, I believe it was. But the homers I called in that one, it was really, really unbelievable to read. So in that game, Griffin Everett, Matt Shaw, Kevin Keister, Matt Shaw, Max Anderson, Gabe Swanson, Efrai Cervantes all went yard.
Goodness.
And just the six innings I called. That was an unbelievable weekend, unbelievable game. I forget what the final score of it was. It was a lot to a lot.
It was crazy. I mean, I think the Sunday game was a little bit of a lopsided affair. But I know
Sunday
the
or Saturday. Let me look it up.
The Saturday game was the one
it
that
was
close.
It was Saturday.
That Nebraska won, and then Sunday I think Maryland just kind of ran away with it.
I remember that now. Yep. It was at LaRusso. Somebody hit a grand slam that game.
It might have been LaRusso. Yeah.
Going
back to the season series overall, then these two teams matched up twice in the Big Ten tournament. And I was lucky enough to be on the call all weekend for that tournament. And just the magic of those two games is something I'll never forget. The first of those two games in the tournament was the 2-1 victory for Maryland in extra innings, with Nick LaRusso hitting the walk-off homer against a stadium full of Nebraska fans. I mean, let's be real. There was not a lot of Maryland people there. It was mostly, if not all, parents of the players on the team. And the rest of the fans there were rooting for Nebraska, because you got to remember it's less than an hour to go from Lincoln to Omaha. So
and it's in the state. So
yeah, exactly.
I think a lot of people in Omaha are Cornhusker fans. So
exactly, and they were traveling well. I mean, before we were getting to the stadium, I mean, there was tailgates going on in the parking lot for Nebraska fans. I mean, it was just an unreal atmosphere and probably the loudest stadium Maryland had played in for quite a little while. I know Ole Miss was loud for a couple of those games that year, but just the fact that they were able to just grind it out and fight through a lightning delay that delayed the game 90 minutes in that seventh inning. I mean, there was just unreal performances from Dave Falco. Nick Dean started that game and was just sensational. Of course, LaRusso with the walk-off. Jason Savakul came in and pitched the 10th inning of that game and then started against Nebraska 2 days later in the semifinals. So that was just a special one. And then, of course, in that semifinal game, Savakul was electric. Andrew Johnson had a great performance. I believe it was Max Anderson who almost tied the game with two outs in the bottom of the ninth inning. It was 4-2, and there was a runner on base, and he hits one to deep right field, and it was something similar to what you said about the Northwestern player who hit the ball that Landros robbed, to where I thought it was gone off the bat, and I'm like, oh no, like we can't give Nebraska momentum going into extra innings. And then if we lose, we would have to play them again in a doubleheader.
Yeah.
But Matt Woods makes the catch on the warning track. And Nebraska season's it ended. Their season ended right there in that moment. So I think just like Indiana probably wanted revenge for what Maryland did to them on their home field last year, I think the same is going to apply for the Husker faithful wanting revenge for what Maryland did to them last year, both in College Park and at the de facto home site at Charles Schwab Field at the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, and like we've said, it's not going to be easy this weekend. I don't think anyone's disagreeing with that. That's going to start with Brett Sears, with how unbelievable
so
he's been.
So good.
He is, let me pull up the stats, he's 6-0 with a 1.14 ERA and 8 starts.
Yeah, that'll do it.
That's ridiculous. But they're a good team, and there's no two ways around it. It's going to be a tough series for Maryland. But, you know, with the momentum they have, I would never, ever, 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 ever count the Terps out.
No, I mean, And that kind of takes us into what does Maryland do with the rotation? Because Sears is a guy that has only given up 7 runs all season long. This will be his ninth start, and he's given up less runs than he has starts on the season. So it's going to be extremely difficult to get to Brett Sears. He's going to be an All-American by the time the season comes to a close. Has a lot of experience within the Big Ten. Was a starter at Western Illinois a couple of years back, and then comes to Nebraska, was a bullpen guy last year, now is their ace of the rotation. But on the side from Maryland, how do you counter that? Because now Kenny Littman just threw 6 innings last Friday, then technically throws his simulated bullpen in game on Tuesday. So it's not like Littman is completely out of the picture on Friday, but I find it hard to believe that they would put Kenny Littman into a midweek game with the idea that he's still going to start on Friday, given that he threw 2 innings in that midweek game, not just one to get out of the trouble in that fifth inning. So if I had to guess personally, and I have no insider information, this is completely just going off of logic of the sport and how rotations work. I would assume Logan Koster gets the ball on Friday night against Brett Sears. Just
And I don't know either. It's just weird because it's a game where I don't think a bullpen game is necessarily smart because you don't want to waste all your bullpen guys on Friday in a game that's
right.
probably going to be pretty tough. And Sears is a guy I do have to correct myself on his stats. They didn't update the website or his like page on the roster with his updated stats after Rutgers. He did give up 2 runs in 6 innings of work against Rutgers. In a game that they eventually lost. So they did lose on Friday night last week. We'll see.
Yeah.
It's not a game that's, completely out of the question. Obviously, Sears is going to make it very tough. He's probably the best pitcher in the conference. But again, there's nothing this Terps lineup can't do. But the pitching, for me, I don't even want to like throw out any theories on like who's going to start because I have no idea. I couldn't even make like a guess.
Yeah, I yeah.
I have no idea, and we'll find out soon enough. I'm assuming we'll find out probably the day this comes out on Thursday. We'll find out at some point, maybe. We'll see.
Nonetheless, it's going to be a difficult matchup on Friday against Brett Sears, regardless of who is on the mound for Maryland. But it's going to be up to the lineup to see if they can get to the best pitcher in the Big Ten right now in Sears. And then Nebraska also has Will Walsh, Drew Christo, who've started on the weekends this year. So,
And their
and
bullpen's
those,
really good too.
yeah. Very solid bullpen, top to bottom, a really good pitching staff, a really good lineup as well that returns Ben Columbus, Josh Caron, Cole Evans, Garrett Engblom, Dylan Carey, and Gabe Swanson from last year. Swanson, I believe he's hurt right now, hasn't played a whole lot this season, and when he was in, he wasn't performing that well, but they've got guys that have stepped up. And so it's a deep lineup, just as the Maryland lineup is. And it's going to be a massive series for both sides. Maryland will go into Nebraska at 5-7 in the Big Ten, which is eighth right now. So that they're right on the fringe of the Big Ten tournament bubble right now, going into their fifth Big Ten series of the year. Nebraska is 6-3 in the conference, which is second in the Big Ten right now, just behind Illinois, who is 7-2. So if Maryland can take 2 of 3, you get back up to 7-8 in conference play, and you would have the tiebreaker over Nebraska. Anything can happen moving forward, because then you got to remember next weekend, Maryland's got Illinois, who's at top of the Big Ten standings right now. So we talked about that momentum earlier that was acquired by the Elijah Lambros catch. We'll see if that can track forward through the next 2 weekends, but at least for sure, we'll see if it can carry through into this weekend in Lincoln.
We will. And if they win this series, that's momentum for, you know, the next couple of weeks. So we'll see. It'll be interesting.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to touch on that we had mentioned earlier before we get off the air here is just the run Eddie Hacopian is going on right now, because we highlighted it with the individual at-bats he had, all the home runs, but the tear he's on right now is just insane to me. And I believe it's an 11-game hitting streak. Let me double check. Yes, 11-game yeah. hitting streak. He's got multiple hits in each of his last 6 games. And over those last 6 games, he's hitting .560. He's 14 for 25 over the last 6 games.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. It's truly, truly unbelievable, the run he's on. He's starting to get his power back. Now 3 homers in his last 2 games. He's now up to 6 on the year. Yeah, he's just on an unbelievable tear. He's hitting exactly .400, which now is a goal of his to try and keep it above the .400 mark. And with the tear he's on, you wouldn't bet against him.
No, and just expanding the run a little bit, not only hits in each of the last 11, but 19 of the last 20 games, dating back to the second game of the Portland series, he's gotten hits in. So in the last calendar month, he's only not gotten a hit in 1 game, which was game 2 of the Michigan series, in which they got blown out. So yeah. to have a guy that has been Mr. Consistent at the top of the lineup, whether he's hitting second, third, fourth, whatever spot Matt Swope has got him in, he's producing. And it's not just one hit here or there. It's consistent multi-hit efforts. And he's a big reason why this team is going to be successful if they are successful moving forward.
Yeah, and I think the more impressive stat for me, for Eddie, is there's only been, hold on, let me make sure I have this right. There have not been any games, any 2 games this year where he's gone back to back without a hit.
Yeah.
Which is unbelievable to me. And again, credit to Eddie. He's on an unbelievable run right now, and we just hope he keeps it going.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't seem like he was going to have any chance to make a run at the home run leaderboard this season for Maryland, but don't look now. He's third on the team in home runs, just behind his brother and Sam, who each have 8. Eddie's got 6 right now. He's leading the team in slugging percentage, too, with also 10 doubles. So, I mean, talk about a crazy turnaround power-wise. And he's one of the few guys on the team that hasn't struck out a whole lot, only 19 strikeouts and 145 at-bats this year. So he's seeing the ball well. He's getting on base over 50% of the time. He's slugging close to .600, and he's hitting .400 exactly. He is we talked about and have talked about how this team doesn't have the true star power per se of the Nick LaRusso or the Matt Shaws, the Luke Schliggers that we've seen over the last couple of years. Eddie Hacopian is becoming that guy right in front of our very eyes throughout this season. Not that he wasn't molding into that last year, but he has taken that next step forward.
He has, and yeah, it's awesome to see. And again, I think he'll have a big series this week. I think he's going to go yard again this weekend. I'll say it. There's my prediction.
Which
for the
game?
Weekend. Oh, I can't give you that. I can't give you that. How about all 3?
All 3. All right. You hear it here first. Jack Suzanne thinks Eddie Hacopian is going to go yard in each game this weekend against Nebraska. It's going to be a crucial series for the Terps to potentially get back over .500 in conference play, but we will see what happens. I will be in Lincoln bringing you all the action on MBN this weekend. I'm super excited about it. It's my third time to Nebraska in the last calendar year.
Really?
Yeah. So I was in the Big Ten tournament last year in May. Went to call the football game.
Football, yeah. I forgot about that.
In November. And now I'm going back to call the baseball series. And then if Maryland makes the Big Ten tournament, make that four times in one calendar year.
We're hoping we're both there.
Yes, we will see. Only about a month left in the regular season. We're two-thirds of the way through. It's flying by, but the best baseball is yet to be played. It's going to be a fun way to wrap up the regular season, and the race to the Big Ten tournament starts right now as Maryland heads off to Lincoln. So that's going to do it for the 103rd episode of the MBN podcast. We kept it a little short today. No interview with Aaron, no other segment. We just wanted to give you guys all the analysis of what's gone on over the last week for the Dirty Terps. So for Jack and myself, we will talk to you next week with episode 104.